So, this is the first day of this three-day retreat here in the Franciscan Center in Tampa on cultivating the mind of patience, patient mind. There's a lot in that title. Some of you I know, and many of you I don't know. So, that's good. So retreat is a wonderful opportunity for those of us who have busy lives, those of us who have many distractions in our life, for those of us who are always juggling priorities in our life, and oftentimes our inner life, our spiritual life, our spiritual development, seeing the big picture of life is often difficult because we're just dealing with one situation after the other. So this opportunity that everyone here has for these 3 days to step back from all their usual activities, distractions, and to be able to come together, especially with this beautiful weather and this place and good meals. And I mean, the conditions are ideal for doing some meaningful introspective work. Please don't waste this opportunity that everyone, you've each given yourself. If you do the retreat the way you do life, full of self, full of likes and dislikes, full of moods, full of, the whining mind, the complaining mind, the judgmental mind, the picking and choosing mind, the liking and disliking mind, you will have a poor to mediocre retreat. But if you're willing to put aside for just 3 days this voice in your head that is only there because of the past. It's a conditioned voice. It's not your true voice. It's a voice of your conditioning. It's the voice of your history. And it oftentimes is not giving you the right advice. It doesn't know better. So we need to understand that this voice is not the voice of wisdom and understanding. This voice doesn't have a clue how to really create happiness for us. That's why we're here. But this voice, you will hear it if you haven't heard it already. you will hear it. And so learning to how to deal with that voice and to listen to something else is very important. So please be aware of that. And don't let that voice ruin your retreat, even if it just ruins a few hours. That's a few wasted hours. We're here because we want to change. We want to heal. We want to transform. So please follow the instructions diligently. Follow the schedule diligently. Following the schedule diligently is a great practice of non-self. Because the world of self is always what? I want to do it this way. I don't want to do it that way. I don't want to get up. I don't want to go to this. I'm not, everybody know that voice? Yeah. That is not the voice that creates happiness and well-being for you. That is the voice that only creates suffering for you. So just learning to follow the schedule. See, it's so simple. Just follow the schedule. When the wake up bell rings, you get up. When the call comes to come, the bell rings to come to the meditation hall, you come to the meditation hall. When the three bells are invited, you sit. Meditation begins. When the bell ends to inviting, that the meditation is over, you get up. You walk. You sit. You walk. And there's time to eat. I mean, this is so simple. Isn't it? I mean, right? I mean, we learn these skills of following directions. I mean, I have a 4-year-old grandson. He's learning that in preschool. I mean, we've all learned these skills. And yet, there will be this voice in you that will still be whining and complaining. Okay? Everybody know that voice again? Please. We need to grow up at some point. You know, we came to retreat. It's a group retreat. There's a schedule. We follow it. You know, don't make it an issue. It's the practice of non-self, letting go of self, learning to meld into the group, putting aside one's own likes and dislikes for the well-being of all. Is that clear? Good. So again, this is we have a great opportunity to come to practice, to hear the teachings, to have guided meditations, to support our transformation. Please be diligent and energetic in your practice. If you've never been that way, this is an opportunity to, over these 3 days, to learn how to apply yourself to your own well-being. Oftentimes, our own well-being is fifth on the list, eighth on the list, 12th on the list of what I need to do today. And years and decades can go by that way. What a waste of a precious life we all have. Right? I mean, there are many people in this world who just struggle to survive. Right? Very difficult life. Just providing the basics. They have to put all their energy into just providing the basics. But we have such good fortune, right? All of us here have good fortune, right? That we could put aside 3 or 4 days, that we could afford, that we had the financial means and the time that we could come to do this. So please think about all the people who can't come here, who don't have this opportunity. So please don't waste it. Another thing you may have noticed already for some of you, that you may be going through detox. Even though this is not a retreat for addicts, you know this is not a treatment facility, you may have noticed that you're going through detox, digital detox. You may have already found that you're missing that connection, that virtual connection, that endless stimulation. That's good. That's good. So again, if you find that you're a little shaky today, or you're constantly reaching for something, or you find your hands are going like this, or your thumbs are going like that, that's just part of the detox process. Okay, it's okay. It'll get better day by day. Because we're turning in the virtual world for the real world. The real world that is always right here. So even though this retreat has this emphasis on the cultivating the mind of patience, and there'll be lots of teachings about that, it is important that we understand that the fundamental mind training is mindfulness. Okay. And mindfulness has many aspects. In its more general aspects, it is this ability to be present to what is happening right now. A simple life that we had as children. It's not, I mean, the capacity to be present to what's here is normal. We all had it. We didn't have to develop it. We just have lost it. Okay. So now we have to practice to remind ourselves that there is a life of the senses, that we are always seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, sensing with our body. And that as human beings, this is what connects us to life. But if we are disconnected from life and are just living a mental life or a virtual life, that is not a full life. And that doesn't give you the sense of wholeness and connection that all of you deeply, I think, want. Many people in our society, when they stop for a moment and have a moment of introspection, experience their disconnection. Their disconnection from the natural world, their disconnection from other people, and often their disconnection even from themselves, their bodies, their emotions. Mindfulness is that quality of mind that connects us to reality. Is that clear? So if this was just a pure mindfulness retreat without a topic, it would be very beneficial for us. Okay, just to spend 3 days cleansing the mind and returning to this very basic capacity to know when I'm eating, I'm eating. When I'm tasting, I'm tasting. When I'm walking, I'm walking. When I'm seeing, I'm seeing. When I'm hearing, I'm hearing. And I'm present to the experience. So please make that kind of the basis, the foundation for your retreat. But obviously, in terms of cultivating patience, cultivating the patient mind, it is this capacity of mindfulness of the mind, which is also so important. So there's mindfulness of the body, mindfulness of the senses, mindfulness of the breath, mindfulness of the objects of the senses. But then most importantly is mindfulness of the mind. That when there are thoughts, emotions, feelings, memories, images in our mind, we know it. We are mindful of that. Change. And again, when we talk about change, fundamentally in Buddhism, which is why in Buddhism the teachings of meditation and mindfulness and insight are so central to the spiritual path, is because there's an understanding that the suffering of human beings and the happiness and well-being of human beings stems from the mind of human beings. It is the mind that needs to be looked into. It is the mind that needs to be transformed. Well, how can we do that if we don't have a way of being aware of what's going on in our mind? What is our mind states from moment to moment? You know, what's behind my action? What's behind my words? What's going on in my mind? I know how I'm feeling, but what's causing that? So mindfulness of the mind is also a very significant quality that we need to train ourselves in. And so over these 3 days, we're going to be training in that. Again, one of the problems as Americans that we have these days is we're fixers, right? So I got a problem with anger, I got a problem with irritation, I got a period with frustration, I got a problem with not accepting things as they are. So, you know, give me the fix it, right? You say, just tell me what to do. Give me, give me the technical thing that I need to change. But that's not the problem. That's the symptom. Our frustration, our anger, our non-acceptance, our rage, our fears, we can go on and on, is the result of something. It's a result of how we are approaching life, seeing life, perceiving life. And if we get that straight, then a lot of this emotional garbage that weighs us down, that contaminates our mind and our relationships, will of themselves begin to lessen and lessen and lessen and lessen. When that happens, then the technology of change becomes so much easier to implement. But there's many reasons, while there may be many people here who have been working on themselves. Anybody here over the course of their life been working on themselves? Right. And we're always working on what? Working on my anxiety, working on my depression, working on my anger, irritation, working on my heart, working on, you see, we're always working on pieces. And we wonder why, even though we've been working so hard on these pieces, that things fundamentally do not change. Doesn't mean things may not get better. Some things may lessen. But fundamentally, things don't change. We still kind of have that same mind. So the Buddha Dharma, the practice of Buddhism, or really any valid spiritual path, is kind of giving us this larger context in which to see life, to see ourselves, to see the mind, to see the unfolding of life, because it is our very misperception of that which is often causing us to have these endless emotional problems that often manifest day by day, case by case, situation to situation, relationship to relationship, and we're always trying to fix it in what? In the situation, case by case. But we need to learn how to step back and see the big picture. Is that clear? And that's very important, right? We're like the person with chronic respiratory problems who's always going to our pulmonologist, always with our lung problem. And he or she is always treating our lung problem, right? But no one's ever telling us about smoking, right? Stop smoking. Then you won't have all this. See, we're out here with dealing with the symptoms. You know, give me something for my symptom. Give me something for my irritation. Give me something for my frustration. Give me something for my anger. Give me something for that, rather than going, why do I even have these things? You know, give me something for my fears. Give me something for my anxieties. Give me something for my worries. But we never ask, why do I have all these things? That's big picture. We want to see the big picture. When you see the big picture and then you work on yourself from the big picture, then transformation is not so hard. Healing is not so hard. There may be many people in this room have been working on their stuff for decades and wondering, why have I been working on my stuff for decades and they're still here? Right? Depending on your age. If you're younger, you might have only been working on it for years. If you're a little older, you might have been working on your stuff for decades. And many of you have made good efforts. And you have to ask yourself, why, you know, with all this energy, money I've put into reading and therapy and workshops, why is it still here? Well, there's a reason. It's not because there's anything intrinsically wrong with you. It's just that we often don't see the bigger context of how things are unfolding. Any questions about that? Anything that's said, that I've said so far, that doesn't sound right or ring true, or I mean, for those of you who don't know me, I'm sort of open for, you know, you can just challenge it directly if you think I'm really off base. You know, you can help me out. So is there anything that's been said so far that doesn't make sense to you or you don't get? Does that mean you are in agreement? Just nod your head if that's the case. All right, just so I want to make sure we are proceeding here together. So I'm just going to read from the retreat description so we all know what we're supposed to be doing. The Buddhist path teaches that true happiness is possible through transforming our mind and mind states. Very important. Right. Ask yourself, do you believe that true happiness is possible for you? Or do you feel that, you know, just if you were a little less neurotic, that would be great? Or do you really believe that you can be truly a happy human being? And that you can have a happy mind, and a peaceful mind, and a loving mind, and an open mind? You know, this is important to ask ourselves, do I really believe it? Because one of the things about our American therapeutic world is, you know, it's often the goal is to be able to what? To cope better with life. Now, again, I'm not acknowledging that coping better with life is not better than not coping with life. That's certainly developmentally a good step. But we're not talking about, you know, settling for that. The Buddhist path teaches that true happiness is possible through transforming our mind and its mind states. That, again, is why mindfulness, concentration, looking deeply into the mind and mind states is the key. Habituation to the mind, I'm reading from the description, that, just letting you know, this is what you signed up for. If anybody thinks that they didn't sign up for this, you can leave, you know, you go, this is the wrong flight. Habituation to mind states of impatience, irritation, and dissatisfaction, non-acceptance, only furthers our unhappiness with life and separation from others. I mean, again, we'll obviously be talking a lot about that, but do we get it? That because I have become habituated, because I normalize ongoing impatience, irritation, frustration, you know, as normal, and that having a mind that is dissatisfied and has a lot of trouble accepting reality as it is, that this is itself creating my unhappiness and my sense of separation. You know, are we willing to acknowledge this to ourselves? That it is, as Shantideva says, you know, we are patient with the wrong things. Shantideva is this great Buddhist teacher of the 8th century, we'll be referring to. He says, you know, we're just so misguided. We're patient with these mind states that only create unhappiness and rob us of our happiness. And yet we are so patient with them, right? Dissatisfaction, frustration, irritation, worries, fears, despair. You know, when they come in our mind, we are what? Patient. We let them hang around. Right? And we don't even only let them hang around, we encourage them. By what? By ruminating. By obsessing. By repeating over and over and over and over. And over and over, and over and over. I could continue for hours. And you laugh because that would seem ridiculous. But yet, we repeat the same miserable story over and over and over and over, and all it does is what? Make you feel worse. And that's all it does. But yet we are so patient with these afflictive mind states. So it's important that we begin to view even, you know, these kind of things that people think are so normal. Yeah, you know, I mean, when people talk about irritation and patience, they always talk about the same thing. I mean, it's not, it's bigger so with people, but everybody is impatient with traffic. I mean, it's like amazing. You know, everybody's impatient with traffic, frustrated with traffic. And no, everybody's, you know, when I, examples, everybody's frustrated with having to wait on lines, you know, at the store, we should always be first, you know, it's like, and we see that as what? Normal. You know, that we can't just drive around and knowing there are other people on the road and that, you know, the road doesn't belong to me. You know, I can't alert the police in advance that I'm, you know, I got to go somewhere and have them clear the way. Right? I mean, you know, but that's the way our mind, you know, because we get frustrated when we run into traffic as if somehow somebody should have cleared the way for us. Right? In Publix, there should be a special line just for us. You know, 10 or less, no, Fred. Right. And Fred can go right through. We laugh, but yet we act as if this is the way the world should operate. The critical mind and the dissatisfied mind are always looking for external experiences to reinforce its basic unwillingness to stop fixating on unwholesome mental state. Now, again, I'm going through descriptions over the course of the day with some of the people who are going to be here working with you. You're going to be actually learning how to do this, okay? So it's not just conceptual. But you see, we have it backwards. You see, we think all these situations and all these people are the cause of my frustration and irritation, right? That's why I'm frustrated. Wouldn't you be frustrated if you had to spend an hour in traffic? Right? Wouldn't you be, you know, frustrated and irritated if you had to wait online and there was somebody up there just going through their coupons and, you know, pulling out the wrong ones and this one expired 4 years ago and, you know, wouldn't you be irritated? You know, it's like we always, and those are little things. You know, I'm not even going for the big ones yet. We think that the cause is out there. We don't realize that what's really going on is that frustration, anger, irritation are in our minds. And what's going on, they're always scanning for something to be dissatisfied about. This is very important. If you're the kind of person who's dissatisfied a lot with life, with people, with situations, politics, you know, we think it's because of that. We don't understand that inside me I have the mind of dissatisfaction that is always looking out to confirm and give it a reason to be what? Dissatisfied, upset. This is very important that we get it. The problem is here, wherever you want to point to. That's where the problem is. As long as we think it's out there, we will be endlessly the slave to external situations because of our wrong view and misperception. It's very important that we understand what's going on and really put an end to it. It is hard for us to believe that the world in and of itself is devoid of emotionality. Things are just going on. Huh? Somebody's just going through their coupons. A lot of people happen to be on the road at the same time. I mean, isn't that true? I mean, what else is going on? Essential for our transformation is the development of patience and acceptance, one of the six great paramitas or perfections of Buddhist practice. So in certain aspects of Buddhism, we talk about that we practice these six paramitas, these six perfections, one of which is the perfection of patience. Patience is unrivaled as the antidote that neutralizes and prevents us from succumbing to aversive mind states such as anger and all of anger's related afflictions, including frustration, irritation, disappointment, confusion, and more. Okay? So many people would say, yeah, I'm not an angry person, right? Yeah, every now and then I blow up, but basically I'm not an angry person, right? Many people probably in here would say that. You know, I'm not a rageaholic, I don't go around raging at everyone and everything. Yeah, I mean, I don't really have an anger problem. Well, what do you think irritation and frustration are? Just low-level anger. Right? Low-level anger. The seeds of bigger anger. And then when we look at it that way, we might say to ourselves, yeah, kind of irritation, frustration is kind of a theme of my daily life. It's sort of in the background. You know, somebody does this, somebody doesn't do that, this happens, that happens, this doesn't happen. Yeah, I get irritated. People, situations. You're probably right. I think most of the people I run into during the day are jerks. Yeah, but I'm not a nice guy. I'm probably running little scenarios in my mind about these jerks. Yeah, I'm probably, every time things don't go my way, I probably get frustrated, yeah. See what I'm saying? You know, a lot of background. A lot of background. Frustration, irritation. That's anger, just low level. And we'll talk more about that over these days, but we need to understand that there is a relationship between this low level stuff and then these outbursts. You know, where does my anger come from? People are often shocked. Where did it come from? I'm not an angry person. But again, it's because we don't really, are not present to and really understand the nature of our mind and the nature of these afflictive emotions. So this patience is the antidote to these mind states. Without developing patience and acceptance, these negative afflictions will continue to be large obstacles to our happiness and transformation. With the cultivation of patience, the seeds of love, understanding, and joy have the possibility to flower. Things do not flower by themselves. In the Buddhist universe, there is what we call the law of cause and effect. Things arise because of preceding causes. That is the cause of this. This that then becomes the cause of that. If we want to have a wholesome mind, if we want to have a mind in which the seeds of love, understanding, and joy can flower, we have to create the causes that will nourish and sustain that. And we have to understand that the mind that is afflicted with negative emotions and thoughts and mind states cannot produce these types of flowers. It is impossible. Apple seeds produce apple trees. Forgive me for kind of returning us to second grade, but it's, you know, we have to realize that the same thing works in our mind. If we want to have a positive mind, it comes from positive seeds. Negative mind comes from negative seeds. It will always be that way. Because again, apple seeds cannot produce peach trees. Apple seeds produce apple trees. Peach seeds produce peach trees. Wholesome seeds, wholesome causes produce positive effects. Negative seeds, negative causes produce negative effects. It's that simple. There's the key. Right? If we want a wholesome mind, we would then be cultivating what? Wholesome seeds. If we want a wholesome mind, but if we look at our behavior and where our mind is most of the day, and we see it's really involved in either afflictive mind states or in not cultivating wholesomeness, do not be disappointed that even though you've read all the books, even though you've listened to all the talks, right? Do not be disappointed that your mind state has not changed. Okay. It cannot change by itself. Okay. So, you know, is it good to read books, spiritual books? Of course. But if it doesn't lead to action, it will have very limited negative effect, and anything it'll have a positive effect, but even worse, it'll have a negative effect that we will lose heart. We'll say, you know, what's wrong with me? God, I know better. Anybody ever say that? What's wrong with me? I know better. I mean, I just read the book, right? And I just had a talk, just a meaningful talk with my best friend, all about the stuff in the book, right? Why is it that I still give vent to anger and frustration and dissatisfaction? Why do I still experience an unhappy mind? It's because we haven't done the cultivation. If we want a beautiful garden, we can't just read the books about gardening. Can't just go to the workshops about gardening. We can't just talk with everybody we know about gardening and all we want to do and all the plans we have for this beautiful garden we want to put in. What's missing? Gotta get our hands in the dirt. Gotta get dirty. Right? And so we have to be willing to enter the universe of our mind, the universe of our thoughts, feelings, and perceptions, the universe of our speech and our actions, to really understand what we're actually in reality doing every day. Okay? That's where we begin. And then, all these things we have read, studied, talked about, it is time to what? To implement. If they are not implemented, and if they are not implemented in a careful, consistent way, they will not develop. Right? So even if you get your packet of seeds, going to do it today. Today's the day. Get your packet of seeds, and you get out there, and you get the earth ready, and you plant your seeds, and you water them, and you feel so good that you've taken action, right? And then you forget. You forget that the seeds need to be tended every day, watered every day. The weeds around them need to be picked every day. So when we go out, you know, many people say, well, I just don't have a green thumb. Maybe there are people like that. I just don't have a green thumb. As if there's some kind of mysterious, mystical thing that has to occur for a plant to grow. true. Anybody can grow plants. You just have to what? Follow directions. That's our problem. We don't follow directions. You know, when you buy plants these days, they have on, I mean, they make it so easy for you. This is a partial shade plant. It needs to be watered twice a week, fertilized, you know? I mean, that's all. And yet we go, what? What's wrong with me? I just can't. Don't have a green thumb. We shouldn't be that way with our own body mind. You know, having a spiritual path, having a dharma in one's life is the directions. We don't have to make it up ourselves. Right? There is a path. There are teachings, there are practices that work. They've been practiced for thousands of years. They're very efficacious. They work. All we need to do is what? What? Follow directions. And if there's one thing that we as Americans, it is our right, what? Not to follow directions. I mean, you know, if there's one thing we all agree on. This is America. Everybody can do it. I can do it my way. I can figure this out for myself. Right? We are the world of rugged individualists. What a waste of energy. Just follow directions. In this three-day retreat, we will study and practice the Buddha's teachings on cultivating the paramita of patience. Dharma talks, guided meditations, experiential exercises, and group dialogues will help participants nourish the aspiration to cultivate patience, clearly see and understand the roots of their suffering, caused by adverse of mind states, and cultivate right view and discipline to support the development of patience and acceptance in their lives. We got a lot to do. Good. Anything that has been said so far that is not clear, and I'm going to be here every day for these couple of hours, otherwise other people will be caretaking you. So I am open. Up for if anybody has any questions, any concerns about anything that's been said so far, it's not clear, or what the implications of that, or, you know, see it totally differently, or don't see it at all. This is the opportunity for you to ask the question. Don't be shy. We only have limited time together. This is not the time to cultivate shyness. This is not the time to cultivate, I don't want to ask a stupid question. I want everybody to think I'm smart. Yes?
Could you say something about the difference between patience and acceptance? Because if there is one, because I signed up for this thinking I was going to gain some acceptance.
Mm-hmm.
But emphasis seems to be on patience.
Mm-hmm. How do you, really? Well, how do you define patience? Actually, I haven't even gotten into it yet, but that's okay. So the question is, hey, I have to repeat it for Brian's my boss. He's telling me I need to repeat it. See, I follow directions too. So the question was, hey, I thought I signed up for a patience retreat.
Acceptance
retreat. What was actually the retreat called? Does anybody really know? Patience. We'll start there. So that's interesting. That's a good, you know, here we are, right? All right. So what do you think the relationship is between patience and acceptance?
Seems like a time-oriented thing, like I'm impatient to wait, accept that I have to wait. I understand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so let me just say very quickly, and we'll obviously over these next days getting into it. Even though there is this paramita called patience in Buddhism we don't cultivate patience. Patience is not a virtue in that sense, as if it's a thing that we cultivate. Patience is the result of. Right? And it is the result of the accepting mind. Okay, so, but what that means philosophically and psychologically, we will go into. But acceptance, again, comes back to view. How do I view this world? How do I view the changes in this world? Right? And when I view it with understanding, then I will be patient with the changes in this world. But if I don't have understanding, I will be impatient. I will be frustrated. I will be irritated. I will be angry. So in Buddhist tradition, the antidote to anger is not anger management. The antidote to anger is patience. And how does one develop patience? Through deep and profound understanding of what's going on. When one understands what's going on, causes and conditions that have created this situation, we will not be angry at it. Because we will understand. So understanding and acceptance are the focus. You see, we cultivate this disappears. This is very different than this case by case. Anger management. Anxiety management. Depression management. Right? Relationship issues, relationship management. You know, child behavior, and it's all about management. We love management. I want to manage this. Manage people, manage myself, manage. We want to manage everything. What? We can get degrees in management, can't we? No. In Buddhism, we don't want to just manage things, we want to understand things. When we understand things, then we know how things really are and we can work with them skillfully. If we don't have that, then we're left with what? Management. How can I manage my emotions? How can I manage the people in my life? Sound familiar? Anybody spend any time in their life trying to manage things? Manage the people in their life, manage the situations, manage themselves. And most of us don't have degrees in management, and yet we're acting as if we're experts. Control and management, that's our way, right? Just get everything under control. Just get everybody doing what I want, marching to my orders, saying what I want them to say, doing what I want them to do. And that's not even, you know, just the people in our lives, right? I mean, we want to get the whole world, right? You know, we think everybody in the world should be, you know, seeing things our way, right? That's called grandiosity. Other questions? Yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
confused because Shanti Davis said we should not be patient. Right. Which means we should do something. Just what you said. Right? I mean, in other words, you said, what you just said was, when an afflictive of mind state arises, you use the teachings on impermanence to look more deeply into things, right, to move it out of your mind.
Right.
Okay, but if you were patient with your afflictive mind state, you would be keeping it around, you know, inviting it in, giving it a chair, wanting to kind of, you know. So what did he do? Unbelievable. What? He said that or didn't do that or unbelievable. What else? Right? And then after they finish the whole story, it's like, why don't you tell me that one again? I mean, I can't believe that a person would actually do something like that. Right? Tell me, you know, and that. That's what we're patient with.
Okay?
That's what he's saying. We got to stop being patient with this stuff that only causes us affliction. We need to be impatient, but he's using it in this kind of paradoxical way of kind of using it kind of in a homeopathic way. It's like, you know, even though we're cultivating patience, you know, with your afflictive mindsets, don't be patient. Be impatient. So that's a kind of transition. Yeah, so good. Any other questions? I mean, a lot of you are new, especially the people who are new and kind of Buddhist teachings and all this may sound a little foreign or a little sounds good, but how do you, you know, what is it? Does it have any ground in reality? So please, if this is not sitting well, because we're going to be over these 3 days going on a journey together, okay? And I'm just kind of trying to lay out the groundwork of our journey. Okay. Is that a tentative or is that a, that's a, okay. Yes.
A little more about understanding and acceptance, because from what I've learned, they're pretty much synonymous, but I struggle, I still seem to struggle with acceptance even when I think I understand, just not understanding as fully as I think I am.
So the question is, I can hear Brian. He's even not there, but I can see him kind of going like this to me. Yeah. What are you doing over there, Brian?
Some kind of distortion.
Oh, yeah, but then maybe you need to leave somebody here who can just keep going like that to me. Yeah, so the question is, I thought acceptance and understanding were synonymous, but personally I find a lot of times when I think I have understanding, it doesn't lead to acceptance, right? That's what you're saying. Many years ago, when I was a therapist, and acceptance was kind of big in the self-improvement universe. Everybody was into acceptance. I don't know if you were there in the 80s, but like it was big. Self-acceptance, everybody's into acceptance. And I would listen to people, sort of like, you know, and going, and they would be saying, "Yeah, well, I've learned to accept, my spouse. This is the way they are. I need to accept the world the way it is. Or I've learned to accept myself as I really am." You know, they would say it, right? They'd say the right words, but just I could tell it wasn't true. There was still a lot of inner conflict. And what I realized, and this is, you know, I say to you is, acceptance is not resignation. It can kind of look the same, right? But to me, we can be in a situation and because we've kind of looked at it, we go, all right, I'm resigned to the fact that this is the way it is. Okay. And what I realize about resignation is, as again, while it looks like acceptance, it's really like defeatism. All right, I get it. You know, I'm tied up, you know, I'm going to be in jail, you know, I accept that. But it really means I'm resigned to it. There's still underneath frustration and anger and disappointment and sadness, you know what I mean? There's still a lot of that, okay, because it's really resignation. You know, it's like, you know, I'm caught. And I finally come to the acceptance that I'm caught. But that's not understanding. And I'll be going into that. So that's important for those of you who maybe think, you know, that you do understand things but may wonder why there's still underneath still a lot of emotional affliction. It's because oftentimes we've become resigned to something. But acceptance is much fuller, much richer. And when there is acceptance, which comes about through understanding, you will know it because it will be a positive mind state. The mind of understanding, the mind of love, the mind of compassion are positive mind states. If there's still, again, anger, frustration, sadness, despair, you know, all those things, we know it's resignation. Is that clear? Does that answer your question?
I'm understanding that more for a positive situation, maybe, but what about a more negative situation? Do we want, wouldn't acceptance be, if we're understanding a negative situation, wouldn't acceptance also still include maybe some negative emotions? Because wouldn't resignation look more like not having any negative emotions?
What's a negative situation? I mean, it's interesting. So let me ask you, what's a negative situation? I mean, there are situations, right, in life. Everybody knows what situation is like. That's what goes on all day. We're constantly in situations. It's a word. Okay. Now, the label positive and negative, is that in the situation? No, that's how we're putting it in. So that's the first thing to understand, okay? That and again, not that like everything is, you know, everything is everything. It doesn't matter what happens, you know, cut off my arm, you know, just my own, you know, skewed perception that's a negative thing. All right, so there's a common sense here, but at least to understand, okay, right, that even the worst situations, you know, like war and violence. To the to the victims, it's an unbelievably negative situation. But to the perpetrators, it's a positive situation. So, okay. So when you say negative situation, what does that mean? What's a negative situation? Mm-hmm. So you. Okay. So that's a fact. She picked a very common example that we can all relate to. So did you just get out or what? I mean, what are you? All right. So a little extreme example, but let's it's a free country and that's the one you gave. So you're saying, all right, what if you're wrongfully convicted of a crime that you did not commit and you're in jail? Okay. What are you going to do now? Are you going to be resigned? If you're going to be resigned, you're just going to be irritated, angry, sad, despairing for the next 10 years. Is that the way you want to be? Because the fact is that you're in jail. That doesn't mean you may not try to get a lawyer. You know what I mean? But we're talking about our mind here. We're not talking about the situation. We're talking about how our mind creates suffering for ourselves and others, and how our mind has the ability to create happiness and goodness. So think about it. If you were wrongly convicted and you had to spend the next 10 years of your life in jail, okay? What are you going to do for the next 10 years? How do you want to be? Yeah, I mean, if you think about it, you go, yeah. I mean, you know. And so to get to that place of you know, happiness may be a little strong, but, you know, at least being okay with and, you know, how can I use this time beneficially for myself and, you know, develop my, you know, I mean, you know, how can I see the potential within even in this extreme situation to create goodness for myself? To allow that, you know, more constructive response to the situation arise, you would have to what? You'd have to get over what? Yeah. Because if you kept playing that every day, that would only cause you to what? Suffer. I mean, you see how crazy that is? Because already being in jail, in prison, is suffering. Isn't it? I mean, anybody would like to spend the next 10 years of their life in jail? No, it's suffering. But if we're there, am I going to now, you know, double down on the suffering? Okay. The freedom of the human mind is, no matter what the external situation is, I can always have control over my mind and how it is dealing with the situation. If we don't know that, and if we don't believe that, then life becomes then we're the slave of what? Situation, right? We're the slave of situations. As long as we think, you know, in a negative situation, I have to be negative, which is sort of what you're saying. Can you see there's no freedom in that, right? And we want to be free. And to understand that the freedom is in our capacity, in how we see, in the Buddhist path, it's not like we're not trying to control situations. It really teaches us how to relate to situations. How am I relating to this? I'm in jail. How am I going to relate to this? Okay? And that's when one understands that, one understands there's the freedom, there's the creativity in life. Can we always control our situations? What? No. Right? Even when we think we have control, what do we quickly learn? Right? So either we're going to be constantly frustrated, disappointed, hurt, you know, et cetera, worried, you know, emotional affliction in life, or we're going to come to a deeper understanding. And that's why, again, having that bigger picture, you know, not going right away, you know, well, what am I going to do, Fred? I'm going to jail next week, you know, what do I do? You see, then we're looking for a fix-it. But if we have the bigger picture, the bigger kind of philosophy of life, and the tools of mindfulness and concentration inside, then we can, even situations like that, you know, very difficult, you know, we have the capacity of dealing with it. And maybe even turning something, you know, incredibly positive out of that. Maybe there's something to be learned, you know, so. Good.
With that in mind, if you were in the jail situation,
yeah, I mean, in our community. So she's asking about, you know, what do you do when you're, what's your name?
Karen.
So again, in our community, and it's really nationwide. I mean, we have a bunch of people who work in the prison, who work with, you know, men and women in prison. So this is a real situation, right? And the interesting thing about being in prison is, well, it's not quite, because the environment is not very conducive to, but you do have a lot of time on your hands. You know, if there's one thing that people in prison, jail have, is they have a lot of time on their hands. Right? if you were in jail and you wanted to heal and transform yourself and use that time you have in jail to do that, could you do it? Could you take advantage of that time to really work on yourself, to develop meditative skills, to develop concentration skills, to develop mindfulness, to develop compassion, to develop understanding? Lots of opportunities in jail. Lots of opportunities to help people who are suffering deeply. So that's what I mean, where you can turn it around.
I think the challenge for me sometimes
mm-hmm.
working through negative emotions and what's the right way to go about that versus whereas, you know, I want to get to a place of joy or compassion
mm-hmm.
or love or understanding, but it doesn't go from anger to that.
Yes. Well, Karen, you're jumping you're jumping the gun. I mean, this is what these next days are going to be about. So, those are all, you know, I mean, that's what this retreat's about. So that's why you're here. And hopefully on the last day of retreat, if that has not been answered, please ask it again, okay? I mean, this is important. I'm not trying to beg the question. I mean, that's why we're here. But that's very important because even in dealing with our afflictive emotions, there are different kind of instructions. Right. Yeah, I think the bottom line is my experience walking a spiritual path is it's got to be efficacious. I mean, it's got to be effective. You know, it's like, taking medicine. I mean, to take medicine, if you still have the symptoms, something's wrong, isn't it? Right? I mean, if you're sick and if you're being prescribed medication, you should feel better. Is that true? I mean, it's kind of simple, right? If you're not feeling better, then you know what? Something's wrong. You know, I mean, maybe the doctor is a quack, right? Or maybe I've been misdiagnosed, or maybe I'm not on the right medicine. But, you know, you understand that you're supposed to be getting better. Okay, so that's one of the things, you know, in this world of technology and different spiritual teachers giving different ways is, you know, what works for you, right? If this is the way to handle anger and transform anger, then you should find your anger is getting transformed. If this is the way to handle anger so, joy begins to manifest in your life, right, then you should feel joyful. If you're not, something's wrong, right? I mean, you know, the other variable could be that you're really not applying it as the instructions said. I mean, which we always have to kind of look at that first, right? Am I taking it four times a day? Right? Maybe not. Maybe I think I could only take it once or twice a day and it'll work for me. So, you know, I think we should always check it out. But the bottom line is, you know, spiritual path, healing, transformation, awakening should not be kind of a mystical, esoteric experience. You know, it should be very clear. And that's why I always enjoyed Buddhism. It's a very clear, delineated path that has been practiced for thousands of years, lots of replication. You know, do this, this will happen. If it doesn't happen, then again, you know, either I'm not, applying it in the way the instructions read, or, you know, maybe I'm misapplying it, or maybe, you know, something. But, I mean, we should always troubleshoot. We shouldn't be, you know, going on for years, or, you know, wondering, hey, where's the joy? And how come I still have anger with me, you see? So that's important that we kind of always be doing a reality check with ourselves to really ensure that you know, this practice is working for us. Does that make sense? Does that answer your question? Okay, so we'll deal with it. Any other questions? Yes. Yes.
Having his experience in Auschwitz, even in that kind of horrific situation, it's almost unbelievable that there were people there that would choose. share a last morsel of food mm-hmm. with someone else, and he says that was the one freedom that they had that couldn't be taken away from.
Right, and that's, again, that shows you that even in extreme situations, there is that possibility always to that we can be in control of ourselves. How we respond and deal with the situation. If we don't understand we have that freedom, then we're lost to conditions. Yes. Anything else before we move on? Yes. Well, so the question is, can understanding and patience kind of in its effects on the situation or another sometime enable, you know, negativity or something? Yeah, so this is, you know, what we're not talking about the next step, you see, Alex. See, like a good American, you're saying right away, well, how do you apply it? You know, I want to apply it. Tell me how to apply it. I want to apply it correctly. And okay, what I'm trying to do is this slow us down. You see, let's get patience first. Let's get understanding first. And I'm serious, you know. And then we can talk about how to apply it, because you're absolutely right. I mean, understanding a situation, understanding a person, should enable us to act in all situations skillfully and wisely. Okay? So, to be patient in the face of somebody doing something that's harmful to themselves or others may not, you know, that's what I'm saying. It's not, see, patience is not a thing. You know, I think what you're getting at is if you see patience as a thing, as a virtue, and you're kind of cultivating it as a thing, it has no wisdom. It has no understanding. It's kind of, you know, one size fits all. So that's what I'm trying to say. In Buddhism, it's not like that. Patience is understanding. Patience comes out of understanding. And we'll talk more about what are we supposed to understand. So that's very important, that it's not, you know, again, in a lot of people, kind of spiritual, religious things, they take these things and they treat them as something to be imposed, you know, like top down. I got to kind of squash myself with patience. I really like to tear this person apart, but I'm cultivating patience. So I'll really just, you know, okay, that's not patience. That's resignation, but not even resignation. That's like, okay, so, repression, thank you. So that's, yeah, so we're not talking about that. We're talking about something that's full, that comes from the inside, and it comes from a real deep understanding and compassion for the situation. So when we do act, this is not about passivity. So we do act, we act wisely. I mean, that's what it's all about, right? Especially, I mean, we are lay people. We live in the world. We don't live in a cave. If we live in a cave, we don't have to think about what you just said, right? But we are constantly challenged in life, right? So that's why we have wonderful opportunity for cultivating real patience and understanding, because our life, it depends on it. You know, one can live apart from the world, apart from relationships, you know, kind of in use, you know, and think one's meditative spiritual practice is pretty good, you know? I'm the most patient guy in the world. Right? You know? Calm, peaceful, patient with everything. But that's not real, is it? It's situational. because you put that person, you know, bring him down to Tampa and let him run around for a couple of days, we'll see what happens. That's the test. Right? And so it's nearly, let me just say again, just in terms of the big picture, we have to understand for those of us who want to develop patience that we have other, I mean, Alex just mentioned cultural. I mean, we have other cultural, you know, we are very results-oriented, right? That's kind of our ethos, you know, get results. We're impulsive. You know, we have very difficulty with postponing gratification. You know, we want it now. We want to achieve it now. And we're very goal-directed. I mean, and again, in a lot of work and situations, you know, that kind of mind state is cultivated, right? So we have to understand that there's a lot of cultural stuff that is already conditioning us toward irritation, impatience, anger, frustration, okay? Because we are told, get it done quick, and we are also very egocentric, right? And we also tolerate high levels of kind of aggressive, competitive behavior with each other in our society. It is not a society where we cultivate the greater good. It is not a society where we say, you know, be aware of others. Put others ahead of yourself. Right? In our society, it's like who? Who's first? Me. Who stands out in school? My child. Right? We even put it on our cars. My child is number one. So see what I'm saying? So it's we're very culturally indoctrinated. And we don't realize that then, therefore, a lot of this self-centered, aggressive, impulsive, you know, I shouldn't have to wait online. You see, there's a sense of entitlement. So somebody as important, as busy as me, should not have to be caught in traffic. Right? Everybody know what I'm talking about, right? I mean, so it's like that kind of mentality, which again is culturally, you know, in so many areas of life, that is inculcated into us, you know, not like somebody tells us, but it's kind of the values. And so we realize with a lot of the everyday things of life, people, you know, people frustrate us, right? You know, we're always interrupting other people. We are terrible listeners. Why is that? Anybody here an interrupter? Why do we interrupt? We think we know better. Right? Or we're impatient. Come on, they should get, come on, get it. They don't, you know, it's like, get it. I said it once, and then, you know, get it. Right? Hey, I'm a busy person. I don't have time to repeat it twice. Right? I mean, it's a whole way we relate to other people. We don't relate with understanding. We don't relate with love. We don't relate trying to connect. Right? Anybody here ever go to business school? I mean, were those the values you were taught? It's like, get the job done. Get it done as quick as you can. Anything get in your way is what? Yeah, so it's an obstacle. Run over it. Go around it. You know, you see what I'm saying? So there's a certain kind of energy that is in the marketplace, and then it just spills over, you know, into, you know, as I say, driving around town or waiting on lines or dealing with our spouses or our friends, you know, it's like, and so we have to kind of be aware that we are cultivating, well, we have to see two things, again, and I would sort of leave you with that today. We have to really see that the impatient mind, which I am making synonymous with frustration and anger and irritation and disappointment and, you know, et cetera, et cetera, we have to understand that it is a suffering mind, okay? As long as we think it's okay and it's fine, and being, you know, going around this world pissed off at everybody is, you know, the mind state that I want to cultivate and normal, change will not occur. Okay? So we have to come to an understanding that these mind states that we're talking about are abnormal in terms of the bigger picture of a healthy mind. If we want our minds to be healthy, if we want our minds to be happy, if we want our minds to be loving, if we want our minds to be open, you know, all these things, if these are the things we want, we have to clearly see what are the things that are impeding that, what are the things that are contaminating and sabotaging that. So when they arise, we name them. When we arise, we name them. We don't welcome them in. But if we haven't named them properly, if we don't really see them properly, we will be, you know, very loving and open and patient with these things that are causing us affliction. Okay? So that's number one, you know, and I would say in the meditation today, you know, to really... Everybody has got to sort of come to the conclusion that irritation and anger and frustration in all circumstances is an afflictive mind state. It prevents me from being happy, and it prevents me from dealing in an intelligent, skillful, compassionate, wise way with every situation in life. Okay? One has to kind of see it for what it is. On the other hand, one has to really be convinced that another way is possible. Right? That another way is possible. And that I want it. You see? That's what I mean about big picture. You know, it's like, you know, before we jump into anger management, you know, do we see the big picture? And do we really see, and are we convinced that I really want to change? And I really believe I can change. And the change I want is very attainable if I follow the directions. But if that energy is not there, then we're not going to follow. You know, if I don't really, you know, if I really don't mind being sick, right? If I really don't mind being sick, then, you know, there's really no energy behind following the directions and doing everything I'm told, is there? You see? But if I really want to be well, if I really want to feel healthy, and that is, then that really is an energizing motivation, then there's a good chance I will follow directions. So again, we see a problem, and we're always trying to kind of, you see, when there's a problem in our life, we're always kind of diving in and kind of, you know, how do I untangle this thing and fix it, you know, we're all like here, rather than what? Let me step back. Right. Big picture, what's going on here? See, what's going on here? Maybe the solution to this is over here. You know, maybe if I was putting my mind and my attention over here, this would never be developing. We never think of that, you see. See, maybe if I was cultivating the mind of acceptance, I would not be so angry. If I was cultivating the mind of understanding, I would not be so irritated. If I was really cultivating the mind of love, I'd be much more open to people and situations. So this is a different kind of psychology than what we're used to. Okay, but again, over these next days, we'll be doing more of that. So before I end today, any good, so please, you know, when you have opportunities, like for the next half hour, there's mindful walking, take advantage of it. See that you're cultivating this capacity to be present, to not be anywhere else. Not be in the past, not be in the future, not be ruminating, not be obsessing. See if you can just very slowly know where you are. Feel your feet. Feel your body moving. See the trees, see the water, see the people. that will give you a ground. So when in the meditations you're beginning to look into your mind, you'll have this skill of mindfulness. Mindfulness is just not going to happen. It's a skill we have to develop. Okay. So please understand, again, there's a relationship between not focusing on anything and just practicing mindful walking outside and when you're later going to be, looking at your mind. Okay? Good. I'll see you tomorrow morning.